Welcome, everybody. My name is Trish, and I'm a member of the Labor Party's Annerley branch. We often have these podcast conversations where we look at the issues and actions that affect us in our local communities, our state, our nation, and the world. Now, today we have a special guest speaker, our colleague Tim, who's a former chair of the Queensland Indigenous Labor Network, an active supporter of the Uluru Statement from the Heart. And Tim's going to provide us some detail on the current issue of The Voice and the upcoming referendum. So it's my great pleasure to welcome you, Tim.
Pleasure to be here, Trish.
So, Tim, would you be so kind as to deliver the acknowledgement of country for our listeners this evening?
Absolutely. So I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of where we are podcasting today, the Yuggera people, and I'd like to pay my respects to their elders, both past and present, and also acknowledge that they've been custodians of the land where we are talking today for over 60,000 years and that sovereignty was never ceded.
Fantastic. And there's a lot of information in that acknowledgement that we'll be touching on this evening too. So thanks, Tim. Now, with your support, Tim, I'd like to sort of give some context for our listeners because I've tried to do a little bit of research just to set the scene. This has become a difficult topic, hasn't it, for a lot of people around the nation? And for others, it's easy. So we want to talk about that. And I've been doing a lot of reading. So I remember a commentator last year was talking about the fact that, look, we just have to admit that there's inequality in Australia, none more so than for First Nations households. I mean, even on just one indicator, we know the average income is half of everyone else's. But it's deeper than that. It's political, it's cultural, and it's social. It goes quite deep. It's this fundamental idea that you've touched on that for over 60,000 years, but just talking about the last 200, Indigenous Australians have been left out of opportunities to share in decision-making and in the development of services that affect them. So there's been quite a few things happening just in my lifetime in the last 60 years. First Nations people were only entitled to enrol to vote in 1962. They were counted in the referendum of 1967. They were subject to compulsory voting like the rest of us only in 1983. In 1992, we had the Mabo decision, which altered the foundation of land law in Australia. And that overturned this doctrine of terra nullius, that the land belonged to no one. The British had claimed possession of Australia and had not recognised that ownership by Indigenous folk. And most recently, the 2013 Recognition Act provided an interim form of recognition of First Nations people and a first step to change the Constitution to remove this discrimination based on race and the knowledge that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples were the first inhabitants of Australia. This idea that we now want to have recognition in the Constitution, particularly the fact that it was not even written collaboratively in 1901. Why is that going to be important, this voice to Parliament? How is it going to build on those gains that have happened in the last 60 years and move into this idea of treaty and truth-telling?
Sure. So obviously, recognition in the Constitution is not a new idea. You know, it first popped up from the 60s or 70s, when all of my elders and lots of people who are now no longer with us fought hard for recognition, land rights and lots of other sovereignty and lots of other issues. Now, the voice and what we're going to vote on later in this year is really down to two things. It's about recognition one, which is recognising that First Nations people were here for 60, 65,000 years, possibly longer. They're the oldest living culture in the world. So we have the oldest art in the world. We have the oldest songs in the world. We have the oldest words in the world right here where we are in Australia. So that's very unique. So it's about recognising that, because in 1901, it thought that this is when modern Australia started, and back in 1788 it's when Australia started. But Australia, the nation, didn't start then. It started, tens of thousands of years ago. And the second bit is about consultation. It's about talking to Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people in their communities, asking them, what will help you? What will help your family? What will help your kids? What will help your community? So what we have at the moment is we have people with good intentions from all levels of government in in Aboriginal communities living in urban areas, in regional areas, to think, okay, this program's going to work. And a lot of times those black voices aren't heard. So something that might work in Brisbane won't work in Mount Isa, won't work in Cairns, Yarrabah. You know, you go out to Perth, you go down to Tasmania. It's all very different, and we need to look at Australia as not one nation, but from First Nations people, there's hundreds of different nations, hundreds of different needs, hundreds of different of life experiences, culture, knowledge, and everything like that. So this is why a voice will be important, because it'll give an opportunity for those voices that haven't been heard for over 200 years to finally be heard.
And that's what I've been reading too, Tim, that the voice will actually be this beginning of something a little bit more practical, like the right to vote and native title laws, that this body in Parliament will have a quicker and more direct line to parliamentary decision making, providing like data and options about laws and policies being created and debated. And setting some sort of baseline for that difference across Australia. Some people have talked about it as being a devolution of decision-making and co-design that hasn't happened before. Is that how it's going to work? I think people are really keen to know how practically it's going to work, because there are economic and political gains that are being made by Indigenous groups, say in Northern Territory, you know, with the fisheries up there. They're making some fantastic decisions to ensure that there's not overfishing. We've got things happening with regard to the clean energy network run by an Indigenous group of people, First Nations group, who are wanting to make decisions. So those things are happening. How will the voice sort of speed that up and move into that more practical devolution of decision-making and power sharing?
Well, I think it'll be in a couple of ways. Obviously, a lot of the issues that are happening and some of the examples you've had, you know, we have moved the dial along consultation a lot since I was born, you know, when I was a young fella growing up. These things aren't doing it. You know, you talk to national parks and wildlife, have First Nations rangers. You know, you have changes of names of places in Queensland. We're in Queensland, so we'll talk Queensland. Like Fraser Island, you know, the national park's now Gari, and hopefully very soon the island itself will be known as Gari. You know, that's what it's been called. That's its traditional name, Fraser Island, not its traditional name. So, you know, those gains are important. But the problem is that while we still have gains in some areas, other areas in the Closing the Gap report every year is really sad reading. Some areas we do really well, other areas we're not going forward. We're going backwards in some of these areas. So this is an opportunity for governments, well, it'll be an avenue for government and the executive to go to this group and say, hey, we think this might be a good idea. Can you give us your opinion about it? Or vice versa, the voice representatives can go to their local communities and they can talk to them and say, hey, we have a problem that is developing. We need this fixed now before it gets worse. So you can actually stop a lot of this entrenched disadvantage from possibly starting in certain areas by identifying problems early, finding solutions that work on the ground that are owned by the traditional owners in that area and the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, and hopefully this will fix it. Because what we've been doing for the last 200 years obviously isn't working.
Yes, I think that's a great point. People are raising that. As you say, and we've looked at the research, there has been gains, but something is absolutely missing. Now, some other people would say, well, we've got Indigenous people as politicians now, First Nations representatives there. How will the voice work with Parliament in that sense, or those representatives as well, in terms of presenting more of that data? I know there's a lot of information about targeting resources for particularly health, housing, education, employment, and how that leads into life expectancy. All of that is on the table. Can you move us into how, with the voice, that moves into the treaty and truth telling, like that bigger picture that came from the Statement of the Heart?
Sure. Well, I think, and again, I wasn't at the dialogues and I wasn't at Uluru conference back in 2017, so I can only go from what I've read, spoken to people, listened to people. But I think the design of voice, treaty, truth was very deliberate. I think what people saw in voice as the first step was something that could be done quickly, not easily, but a lot quicker than treaty. Treaty is going to take years and years and years to come to actually get any kind of treaty, whether it's one treaty, 100 treaties, 200 treaties, however it works. It's a long, long process. So even if we started today, we're not going to have any treaties signed, in my opinion, for at least 10 years. So voice is an opportunity to get the ball rolling now, to make changes now, and to make sure that First Nation voices are amplified at the Commonwealth level. And fortunately, I've seen some other states are also starting to initiate their own voices to their own parliaments. South Australia are well down the track and almost there. I think Queensland's in the process of starting that out, as well as Victoria. So, you know, this process of people are saying, hey, this is a wonderful idea, let's get on board. We need to make sure that our First Nations people are heard, listened to, and we can provide the services that they need and require.
And as you say, this actually is nothing new. We know in New Zealand that this has been, and they have had treaty and voice for a long time. So those models, there's proof that they work. So now that we've sort of set that broader context, tell us about the timeline for the referendum and what it is that you're wanting people, particularly in our branch and in the Labor Party, to be thinking of in the next couple of months. What should we be doing?
I think, first of all, if you're not sure about something, ask someone. You know, if you do go, you know, people always say, you always see this in, do your own research, which is all great, but you've got to make sure you're talking to the right people and you're getting the right information. Yeah, you know, when we were growing up, we went to an Encyclopedia Britannica, pretty factual. A lot of that stuff's now outdated, we know a lot different, but that was your main source. But now anyone, you know, your neighbour can put a post up that looks legit, that could be based on nothing. So you've got to make sure that you're talking to the right people and you're getting the right information. That's the first thing you want to do. If you are confident about the information, talk to your family members. Talk to your neighbours. If you're down at the RSL or you're down at your local sports club, you know, have a chat to the people there that you know. Talk to your mums and dads at schools. Talk to everyone. Just start that conversation. You know, some people, there's probably a lot of people out there that are unsure, right? Because this is a big decision. We haven't had a referendum since 1999. The decade of 2000-2010 was the first decade that Australia never had a referendum. And then we still have another one 10 years later than that. So I think if you're under 42, you've never voted in a referendum. So there's lots of people out there that probably don't know what a referendum is. Certainly not the practicalities of it. So my thought is to have those conversations at your local community level, because at the end of the day, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has one vote. I have one vote. You have one vote. Everyone has one vote. So we're all equal in this. It's not a politician's referendum. It's the people that will decide. So it's important to talk to people and have a look. And if there's some kind of meeting on or there's some forums on or anything like that, go ahead, attend, listen, you know, get those ears open and really take in that information. And don't be afraid to ask questions.
Yeah, I think that's true. Our branch and also the Labor Party does have a lot of information out there, and we can steer people towards those sites. I think for me, the conversations I'll be having with people is that it's really quite simple. It's a moral imperative, and in actual fact, it's only going to be a positive for me and my children and my colleagues and you as my colleague and friend in the party. It's not going to affect people negatively. It absolutely will be only a positive result for all of us, I believe, because if we're looking at some of our most vulnerable people, we're actually going to be doing something collectively, that moral recognition. But it means, like with acknowledgement of country, I always get teary when I hear that, because I feel like, oh, I'm included, I'm part of this, I'm now connected and I'm being included, and I want to bring us all along together. And I think that acknowledgement and welcome to country, how we do that quite regularly now, has been very well accepted. So this will only be another step in that direction. Do you think that's the way to talk to people? Like, my friends and colleagues go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Do you think that's one of the ways to go?
Look, I think it's based on the individual. You know, each person talks to their friends and family and colleagues and people you meet down the street a lot differently. So whatever is comfortable and however you can relate your experience and relate how you feel and relate what you think this will do for us as a nation. So on that personal level, really be personable and say, this is why I'm voting yes. This is my reasons for voting yes. It may gel with that person and there are some lights and that might convince them, but it may not, but that's fine. One of the things I sort of say to people, especially people who aren't a First Nations person, is if there's a yes vote, there's a voice to Parliament, it will have zero effect on you. It's a bit like the marriage equality debate, right? I'm heterosexual, married with kids, have a wife. After the debate and after the referendum and got passed, it didn't change my marriage one bit. Still married to my wife, it's not compulsory. So, and this is what this is all about. It's about recognition. It's about us as a nation saying that our birth certificate didn't start in 1788, didn't start in 1901. It started possibly before any other nation in the world, right? We have possibly the world's first peoples living here on land, on country, and what a great country it is. This is just a great step, and it's going to have international ramifications, you know. Through my work and through other things, you know, I listen to a lot of politicians and a lot of UN stuff and lots of that. The world is watching us on this. It is really watching us. And if we don't get this right and we say no, I have a feeling that we're not going to get another chance in my lifetime, and which is really scary for me. That, you know, it's like the referendum. Everyone remembers the referendum. It's like, you know, a lot of those people who wanted a republic but didn't like the model, so they voted no. They went, oh, it's all right, we'll have another vote in 4 or 5 years. You know, we're now a quarter of a century down the track and we're no closer than we were in 1999. And this is even more important because if this doesn't happen, Treaty Truth, they're going to be in the back shelves because all those people that said no, they're going to say, well, obviously Australia doesn't want that either. So this will put us back 50, 60 years if we get this wrong. So it's really important that you have those conversations with your community, with your family, and anyone who bumps into you, and get out there and campaign actively in your community as well.
Fantastic. Yes, I agree. I think many people will have different perspectives and ideas for and reasons for saying it's a great idea. And we'll setting aside the question of the Republic, which we'll come back to in another podcast, I'm sure, that again will add value to, as you say, Australia as a world leader in terms of democracy and human rights and equality. Well, we've probably come to the end of our time together. Just let's know, what do you think is the time frame for what is happening in the next couple of months with the referendum?
Okay, so my understanding is that the referendum working group will advise the government of their suggested wording. Then obviously that will then be introduced to Parliament, and then we'll go off to the regular committees to look at, report back to the Parliament as other things would be. And then it comes back to the Parliament for a debate. If it then passes, there is time limits, so there's a minimum time limit you have to wait, which is 2 months and 33 days. Not 3 months, 2 months and 33 days. And the maximum is 6 months. So really the date for the referendum can't be set until those words that will go into the referendum are decided by our parliament. So that will then set the clock ticking. So there'll have to be a referendum within the 6 months, but it can't be earlier than 2 months and 33 days. So we're still a bit away. So you're looking at the earliest would be probably mid to late September, and that would be the absolute earliest at this stage. More than likely looking at late October or November.
Fantastic. So as we'd like to advise all our branch colleagues, more information will be coming your way. And if you need to reach out and speak to any member of the branch or the executive, please don't hesitate to do so. So you've heard from Tim today. Thanks, Tim, so much for your wisdom and sharing your ideas and information. And remember to our branch members that, you know, Annerley Branch is active, local and progressive. And we'd like to regularly ensure that you're involved and engaged in conversation with us. And this topic is one of the most important that we'll ever face in our lifetime. So please keep the conversation going and we'll talk to you next time.